It's been sold to us that it is something that we can't control, that is a very complicated disease, which it is.
Throughout this series, we've talked about ways to treat symptoms of Alzheimer's and slow progression. But in this episode, we're going to focus on carers and loved ones and how they can help manage the disease, particularly in later stages.
I can only acknowledge that it's a difficult situation as the disease gets particularly advanced or if the person has behavioral symptoms that are difficult.
We've organized the advice into five parts: making Alzheimer's-friendly changes to your home, helping someone with personal care, things not to say or do, getting support, and advanced planning.
Every person is different. Every care partner is different. Every environment is different. Our moods change. And what works today might not work tomorrow.
And at the end of the episode, we'll share additional resources where you can learn more.
Remember and celebrate what works, and then don't forget to share it with others, because that makes their journey easier.
This is the Alzheimer's Disease Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Arneson. This show was created for educational purposes only. It is not a substitute for formal medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. So if you have questions about a medical condition, talk to your qualified healthcare provider. Part 1, making changes to a person's environment. In episode 3, we heard from Dr. Jane Mullins, a researcher and consultant, about how Alzheimer's disease can alter a person's perception of the world around them.
Things may look different in space and time, so their hands may look bigger. The distance between a cup of tea on a table might be different from what we're seeing.
So to keep a person with Alzheimer's disease safe and comfortable in their own home or in a care facility, Dr. Mullins advises making a few key changes to their environment. For example,
try and make the place as light and clutter-free as possible. The person need to see more contrast because they may not be able to distinguish things so easily. Light is very important. Some people think that their loved one's having a hallucination. It may not be a hallucination. It may be what's called a misperception.
A misperception is when someone mistakes an object for something else, like a black rug for a hole. But it's not just physical clutter that can be dangerous or disorienting.
If the environment's very busy and full of noise, the person may struggle and get a little bit confused. So try not to overstimulate.
It may be distressing for a person to have the radio or TV on all day. Getting out into nature, on the other hand, can be very calming.
If you have an outdoor space, like a garden, you can help try and get them to sit out in the garden. They'll feel the breeze on their face. They might hear the birds singing. Get somebody grounded in nature.
Dr. Mullins also recommends using environmental cues around bedtime to help a person distinguish day and night and sleep more easily.
Making the house a bit dark. Avoid the use of screens like TV or iPads or phones for at least 2 hours before bed. I do recommend like a bedtime ritual, a nice warm bath if that's possible, or even help the person put their hands in some warm water with a little bit of lavender oil. That can be quite nice.
This brings us to part 2, helping a loved one with personal care, which can be really difficult. Here's physician Dr. Philip Sloan.
Things like helping somebody get out of a chair, helping somebody walk, making sure they're stable and safe when they walk, dealing with incontinence, loss of ability to control the bladder, or even the bowels later on. All these things become major issues.
Anthony Copeland Parker is facing some of these challenges with his partner, Catherine.
She doesn't dress herself. She doesn't shower by herself. And so all those things I have to do for her. I have to guide her to the bathroom, things like that. She is incontinent overnight. She does a pretty good job during the day, but I have a reminder every 2 hours to get her to the bathroom just to make sure that she is able to stay continent during the day.
For the moment, Anthony is managing largely on his own, but each person and carer is different, and their needs will change as the disease progresses.
Some family are able to manage them by themselves. Some will bring in some help at certain times of day to help with these things. As the disease progresses, it takes more than one person. And management should always be oriented toward the best function they have the best quality of life they have and having some pleasant events during the day.
If you're caring for someone with Alzheimer's, the experts we talked to offered a few pieces of advice. Perhaps most importantly, Dr. Mullins said caregivers should help someone stay independent for as long as possible.
One of the reasons often people tend to lose abilities earlier on is because we do tend to take over. One of the last parts of our memory that really does deteriorate is called procedural memory.
Procedural memory is a type of long-term memory involved in actions or skills. So instead of cleaning someone's teeth for them, Dr. Mullins recommends helping the person do it for themselves.
Say, for instance, they need to clean their teeth. You've done a bit of miming. You're showing them what you want them to do. If you hold their toothbrush and then get their hand to go over yours, you're still helping them, but they are actually still using that movement.
Some people with Alzheimer's disease may also struggle to understand what you're saying, and this is where using sensory cues instead can help.
Instead of just saying, come on, we're going to go and have a shower now, or I'm going to give you a wash, they may not understand what that means. If you're helping dressing somebody, if you're trying to help them get their shirt on, maybe sing a little tune and do it in a sort of rhythmic way. Do it yourself as well. Show them what you're doing. One thing I would also say as well, familiar clothes is really important, but they may really struggle to put things on when there are patterns on them. So sometimes plain clothes might be easier.
Alzheimer's can also affect someone's sense of taste and smell, which can make it harder for them to eat.
And that can have a massive effect on the person's sensory abilities to eat, drink, and swallow safely, and certainly to enjoy it.
That's Sandra Robinson, a speech and language therapist.
Or it might not be the type of food at all, but how it's presented or how it's given. It could even be that the person has a preference as to who is around or where they eat and drink.
All of this means that you may need to get a little creative with textures, flavors, and mealtime routines.
I make a breakfast that is a mixture of baby cereal, granola, and a smoothie mix, and I mix it all together so it's a consistency that it'll stay on the spoon real easy. I put it in a bowl. I put a slip pad down below so that it doesn't easily move.
Anthony's also found that making dinner a shared activity helps Catherine eat better.
I put all the what we're going to eat into one dish, and we just eat out of the same dish. I'm sitting right next to her, got my arm around her. I'm communicating both verbally and by my mouth motions to get her to open her mouth, and she seems to be eating a lot better us doing that way.
Whatever you try, Sandra said it's most important that your loved one is eating safely and getting the nutrients they need.
Those with Alzheimer's are also a significant risk of becoming malnourished. That may or may not be because of the swallow problem. It's sometimes because of appetite. But again, that's why it's really important to try and keep a record or just monitor really closely on how much somebody is managing to eat.
Some families also find that their loved one with Alzheimer's can get more agitated during personal care, especially bathing or showering. And Dr. Sloan wants to remind you that the person may be confused by their surroundings, so caregivers should be careful with their interactions.
We looked at over 100 different times when a caregiver was hit by somebody with dementia during bathing. And we looked at the 10 seconds before they got hit to see what was happening before them. And one of the most common things was the caregiver started to do something without telling them what they were going to do.
Preparing someone for what's going to happen and keeping them comfortable can help reduce outbursts and make things like bathing or dressing a little bit easier. Of course, if the person is really agitated, Dr. Mullins would advise you not to push it.
If someone's quite stressed and you're trying to help them with their personal care, you need to take time out. We've got to think about how we would feel ourselves. Realize that the end result, if they haven't cleaned their teeth to the standard that you want them, maybe that's not such a problem.
This is true not just for personal care. Some people with Alzheimer's disease experience changes in mood or personality. They may be more prone to verbal, even physical outbursts, and that can be really tough for family and carers to deal with. As we talked about in episode 3, a lot of these behaviors are driven by emotion.
the person might become very agitated, anxious, and in some cases aggressive, which I hate that word, because usually the people that have displayed those sort of feelings and that sort of behaviour is because they're in fear, they're frightened. They may not be able to understand what's being said to them.
So it may be more effective to engage them emotionally rather than react to what they're saying.
So often, it's not necessarily trying to understand the words a person is saying. It's more about understanding their emotions, making sure that we can mirror them emotionally and we can help them, very often a non-verbal way, showing love, maybe a smile.
Of course, this doesn't work for everyone, and it doesn't work all the time.
There's some people who just get really difficult. Even in the best situations, families have a tough time. The next solution, of course, is to just walk out and leave them alone. Let them get over it. Obviously, you can't walk away if they're not safe. But if they're having an outburst and you can get away, often just a minute or two, it'll be better. It'll calm down.
So far, we've talked about things you should do to help care for someone with Alzheimer's. Now let's shift to part three of the episode, things you shouldn't do. Dr. Daniel Gibbs and Sarah Hornback said there are a few things that are not helpful to say to someone with Alzheimer's or their loved ones.
When somebody tells them that they have Alzheimer's disease, I would urge people not to push back and say, oh, no, you don't. Your memory is much better than mine. That doesn't help.
A lot of what I get now is, I don't think anything's wrong with Paul, or he seems fine to me, which, you know, it's like telling someone with cancer, you don't look like you have cancer. How's it supposed to look?
Instead, Dr. Gibbs and Sarah prefer it when people ask questions about their experiences.
It would be much better to say, really, tell me about it. What's going on? It's better to talk openly with friends and neighbors and family rather than avoiding the topic.
It's not helpful to dwell on the negative. I try to think in terms of, what would I say to a cancer patient? Would I say, boy, man, that's just awful? And no, I would say, what are your plans? Do you need help with transportation? Those kinds of things are going to be far more helpful than the feeding into my pity party.
It's also not helpful to test someone's memory or overload them with information.
Asking lots of interrogative questions and trying to get somebody to remember something just places too much strain on them and is possibly unfair, and it could even be utterly impossible.
Sandra says it's better to keep it simple, but still respectful.
Don't talk at length, don't use too much complex language, but also don't talk down to them. It's about having some respect and some dignity for the individual.
Lori LeBay cared for her mom and has worked with many people with Alzheimer's disease. One man she worked with reminded her that it's often enough for carers and family to just spend time together.
And he said, I like to relax before I got dementia. I still do. Please, if I am sitting on my bench in the backyard listening to the birds and absorbing the sun and feeling the breeze on my face, don't tell me I have to go do something to make yourself feel better. Sit next to me and relax with me.
Sit, relax, stay in the moment. Those are good tips for caregivers too, because caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease can be heartbreaking, exhausting, and challenging on so many levels. And this brings us to part four, getting outside support.
I was more stressed out than what I thought I was, because you don't slow down to look at yourself. But all of a sudden, I had acid reflux, I had asthma, I had a little anxiety, and I'm like, where did this come from? And after my caregiving roles were done with, all that stuff went away. I realized that I was feeling the loss, that kind of ambiguous loss that hits you constantly through this disease.
So if you love someone with Alzheimer's, Dr. Sloan advises you get other people to help you out.
Monitor your feelings. And if you're reaching a point where you really are irritated or annoyed or angry about the job that you're supposed to be doing, you're overwhelmed and you need help. Don't be afraid to ask friends. Don't be afraid to ask family members. And some will pitch in and some won't. And so find the ones who will.
The stigma around Alzheimer's disease means that some people don't have a big support network of friends and family. If this describes you, know that there are lots of other resources, like memory cafes, support groups, and local Alzheimer's Association chapters.
I had friends and family members that just like, we don't need you anymore. They didn't have anything to do with me. And I felt really bad. But what I did find was other people came into my life that filled my soul.
Always try to remember, with a disease like Alzheimer's, you're not alone. Therapy or counseling can also be really helpful to work through the emotional impact of Alzheimer's disease.
We can't truly give top-notch care when we have an emotional need. And so I had to figure out how to make that go away and not feel sorry for myself, really, that my life wasn't turning out the way that I thought it was going to be for myself or for my mom.
And don't forget to do things just for yourself.
I enjoy crafts. I enjoy cooking. I enjoy being physically active as well.
Take a break, even if you can't physically leave your loved one.
For me, I try to concentrate on what do I like to do on those tough days.
For Anthony, it's running. Catherine is his running partner, but she slowed down.
I was getting into a point where I wasn't getting enough exercise myself.
So Anthony got a pushchair.
She'll sit back and relax, and then I'll go another mile or two by pushing her along, and I get a lot more exercise, so it helps out a whole lot.
The present is really the only moment that you can recognize joy or create joy. And that's what I wanted for not only my mom, but for myself. Life can still be really good. It doesn't have to be perfect.
We've reached the fifth and final part of this episode, advanced care planning, which is a really important part of making life with Alzheimer's really good and manageable, like Lori said. And everyone we talked to, including Dr. Sloan, said the best time to think about the future is now.
It's very helpful to know what the person's values are early in the disease. Now people are being diagnosed with very good cognitive function to the point that they can actually participate in decisions about what their values are.
Advanced planning includes things like wills, estate planning, creating power of attorney, and advanced directives, which are a person's instructions for what kind of care they want to receive in the later or end stages of disease.
If they needed hospitalization, if they needed, from a medical perspective, to have a tube inserted, this kind of thing, and even what they would consider life not worth living. And that differs very much from person to person.
This could also include what kind of long-term care a person wants. And there are a lot of options.
There are resources for long-term care in the home setting, long-term care in day centers, long-term care in assisted living, long-term care in nursing homes.
If we ended up in an assisted living, one of the things that I said was that we would always live together.
Anthony and Catherine made their decisions about long-term care shortly after she was diagnosed.
So I have that as a requirement when we go out and we look for different places. So you have step-down programs. You're in an apartment, don't need any help at all. You now stay in the same place, but then you hire folks to come in to help you, or you use their services.
The sheer number of options can feel overwhelming. But there are services and resources available in every state to help families figure out what works best for them.
There's a group called Professional Geriatric Care Managers in pretty much every state and community who can help guide that process. In addition to geriatric care managers or social workers in the area, another resource is, of course, the Alzheimer's Association. The Alzheimer's Association has chapters in every state, and they've got a hotline. Some governmental agencies have hotlines for senior services.
There's also nursing home ombudsmen in every state, and their job is to identify which homes offer good care and which ones don't. We'll put links to these resources on our website, and if you're listening from outside the U.S., there's international information there too. Also, Dr. Sloan acknowledges that nursing homes carry a negative connotation for some people, but he would urge everyone to do their research and stay flexible.
I really have to mention this. There's a saying, oh, I promised mother I would never put her in the nursing home. That promise puts families in a real bind sometimes. Because if somebody reaches the point where they're very difficult to live with and the family really can't handle them, but they've got this promise. So I think families and people with dementia really need to keep open the possibility that anything could happen.
I, at one point, being a pilot and always believed in getting the airplane down safely, that I was going to figure out a way for Catherine to not die from Alzheimer's. But at the same time, now I understand that in her time horizon, that's probably not going to happen. So for us, it's just trying to have as much quality of life as possible for as long as possible.
On our website, you can find links to support groups and a Memory Cafe directory, as well as Lori LeBay's education and awareness organization, Alzheimer Speaks. There's also information about counseling and ideas for mentally stimulating, fun activities to do with your loved one. We also have links to the resources for navigating long-term care options that Dr. Sloan mentioned, as well as a few books written by the people in this episode that have even more advice for carers, friends, and family members. And if you're listening from Canada, the UK, Australia, or another part of the world, we'll continue to add more resources as we find them.
Read up about the illness. Recognize that your individual is going to be an individual, and what you read may or may not apply directly. And then try to read the person. Listen to them, understand them, do what you can to understand where they're at. And that's all we can do.
This is the last episode of the Alzheimer's Disease Podcast. For now. We know that caring for someone with Alzheimer's is complex and difficult. In this episode, we talked about helping someone feel safe in their environment and assisting them with personal care, but we know there's more to cover on topics like advanced planning and getting outside support. So we'll be back with more episodes covering these and other issues in greater detail. Like and follow our show on your favorite podcast player and subscribe to our newsletter so you're updated when we release new content. And if you've got a question or a topic you want us to cover, get in touch at alzheimers@healthunmuted.com or on social media. This show is part of the Health Unmuted audio library by Mission Based Media, written, hosted, and produced by me, Michaela Arneson. Sound design is by Yvonne Urich. Our executive producer is Dan Kendall, and Chris Hemmings is our associate editor. Many thanks to Anthony Copeland Parker, Dr. Daniel Gibbs, Sarah Hornback and Lori LeBay for sharing their personal experiences, and to Dr. Philip Sloan, Dr. Jane Mullins, and Sandra Robinson for sharing their medical expertise.